Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. Debate is hot and heavy over proposals to increase the minimum wage. It's an active issue here where fast food workers are seeking to more than double Missouri's $7.35 minimum. President Obama's proposing a $10.10 minimum wage. Seattle, Washington has just passed a $15 an hour minimum. Proponents say increasing the wage would lift millions out of poverty, boost consumer spending, and help restore the middle class. Critics say it will damage the economy by pushing up prices and costing people jobs. There are passionate advocates on both sides of this discussion. I'm Don Marsh. We'll hear the arguments for and against increasing the minimum wage and ask you to weigh in. Joining me in the discussion, Reverend Martine Raffanon, active on workers' rights issues, including the St. Louis fast food workers. He co-chairs the Missouri Jobs with Justice Board. Howard Wall chairs the Economics Department at Lindenwood University and is a researcher with the Show Me Institute. He directs the Institute for the Study of Economics and Environment. Chris Summers is the owner of the Pie Pizzeria and Gringo restaurants. He increased the minimum wage for his employees to $10.10 2 months ago. He has also increased the population. He's a brand new father. Chris, congratulations to you.
Thank you.
Baby girl.
Thank you. Adelaide Marie.
Adelaide Marie. Well, best wishes to you and the family. Okay, let's get on with it. Later on, by the way, we'll be meeting a minimum wage worker who will give us a call and talk about life as he sees it. Howard Wall, let me begin with you. There's a lot of ground to cover here, but give me your basic best argument against the minimum wage.
Well, the minimum wage has winners and losers. Right? If you raise the wage that's required, you're basically making it illegal to hire the lowest skilled workers because no one is going to hire somebody who is not bringing in that much revenue in terms of productivity and so on. So although there are winners from the minimum wage, those who keep their jobs, there are losers, and the losers are the ones who are most often supposed to be the ones that the minimum wage is supposed to help, and that's the poorest and the least skilled. Right. And it kind of destines them to never gain job experience, and then they're in a life of poverty.
So the unemployment rate, therefore, goes up according to this scenario.
Right, and permanently so, because people don't get the on-the-job training they need in those entry-level jobs to have a productive work life.
Okay. Martine Raffanon, I'm sure you're going to want to counter some of the things that Howard has said.
Well, I want to agree with Howard. I think there are winners and losers. I think the winners are those who are able to pull so much equity out of our communities by paying such a poverty wage to many, many people. I think it's time for us as community members to understand that when workers make such a low wage, we end up paying for it. We end up paying for the government subsidies and the other kinds of support that these workers need just to be able to survive and to get to work to the next day. So we want a greater number of winners in our community. We want workers to be able to make a fair, just wage, perhaps a living wage. The fast food workers have been asking for $15 and a union. So it's those two go in combination. They know that to get a $15 wage, that's close to a living wage in our community. It's not quite there, but it's close to a living wage. And they know that they're not going to be able to achieve that without representation and a voice in the workplace. And I think that goes along with this discussion of a minimum wage. It's the opportunity for workers to have a voice in the workplace.
Chris Summers, it was just a couple of months ago that you decided to increase the minimum wage for your workers. What were you seeing and thinking when you decided to do that?
Well, I was thinking that it is incredibly unfortunate that some people who work for me and work for others, granted we were not paying the state minimum wage of $7.50, we had nobody in that wage, but that people were working so hard and they couldn't fill the tank of gas, they couldn't get the car repaired to get to work, so sometimes they would be, written up or terminated for job performance because they couldn't get by, they couldn't even scrape by, and we saw people even leaving us for a quarter raise somewhere else or 50 cents. And that level of desperation, I think, it has no place in our country with a GDP at, $50,000 per person in this country. And I realized that people were working incredibly hard for us and couldn't afford to eat the pizza or buy the pizza that they were making. And, it may be clichéic to call out Henry Ford on that old one, but it does work. And I don't think that the that the economics and the studies and the evidence is there that shows that when you raise the wage, that people get left behind. Frankly, if you want to call it the lowest skill, the minimum skill, minimum wage, we've had several people now start off at the very lowest position in our company and rise all the way to general manager, making $65,000 a year, you know, in some cases. And they came in with that minimum skill, that minimum wage. And I think there we know it, as far as our efforts to hire that there are still plenty of – it's hard to find people at the lowest wage because, you know, there are – We can't find good talent, and we raise the wage in order to also attract better people. And we are now 2 months into this, and we run our business pretty tight, and we're comparing our top-line revenue and our labor costs against these new budget numbers where our labor costs went up, and we're doing just fine.
Have you had to let anyone go?
Of course not.
No. Everything is pretty much status quo, except you're spending more money to keep your employees.
Yeah, we're spending more money to keep our employees, which means there's more money in the economy. And, you know, people generally who oppose a minimum wage increase think that, you know, other people will make better decisions when there's more money at the top. But I think that has proven in the last few years, in particular as the rich got richer, that there wasn't a trickle down. And the spending power of more people, whether they're my own employees who are buying our pizza or they're putting gas in their car, they're getting their car repaired at the auto body shop or whatever it may be, we need to get more money into their hands. And it's not only the right thing to do for the economy, it's the right thing to do for them.
Yeah, I want to just clarify the Henry Ford comment. Henry Ford paid his people, I think, $5 a day because he wanted them to be able to afford the cars that they were making.
And that's yes, what thanks that was for all clarifying. About.
And that will just, maybe not everyone got that particular sure. reference. Howard Wall, what do you think? This seems, you know, on the to the outsider looking into this whole discussion, to be a pretty persuasive argument we've just heard.
Well, I'll say one thing. You know, I don't know anything about making pizzas, but I do know a lot about the economic studies about the minimum wage. And they show that there's a negative effect on employment for those at the low end. And many people are thrown into poverty from it. Some are taken out of poverty. And some people lose their jobs, and that's what the evidence shows. And also, there's this notion that somehow if you pay people the minimum wage, it's magic money that comes out and you've thrown it into the economy, and then the economy takes off. But it doesn't come from nowhere. It comes from consumers who are now paying higher prices, and they don't have money in their pocket. So their spending will decrease because of it. So it's not a magic potion that you can just induce a higher wage, everyone's richer. It's false because you're changing all of the incentives, and there are some people who are really harmed by being kicked out of the possibility of employment.
Can we talk about that increased buying power and the increased wage? And you know, if we use $10 as a baseline, and the Seattle or the newly accepted wage in Seattle stepping up to $15 through the next 6 years or so, let's say that's a 50% increase in the labor cost for that business. Now, the labor cost of that business is probably only 30% of their total cost or 30% of their revenue. So for a worker to be getting 50% extra, let's say, $5 additional, and the business has a stepped up, let's say 50%, 30% of that, it's an extra 15% of the total cost of running their business. Even if they pass that 15% along to the employee, that 15% is still a smaller percentage of the earning potential or the buying potential and the economic boost to the economy. So it just doesn't follow that raising a price is going to, if you raise the wage for the worker greater than, you know, the percentage of the price increase, everybody wins. And it's again, this is all stepped up just to mainly to keep up with inflation. I mean, we are lower. 1968 was the peak of minimum wage, you know, adjusted for today's dollars. And prices are increasing dramatically and wages are not. And Congress is not doing it at a federal level. So people like myself, cities like Seattle, and a lot of other businesses are doing it because we know that we can't wait for Congress to do anything to help, you know, Joe Q Public, you know?
Martine, you're working with the fast food workers, and you want a little bit more than double what their wage would be. I'm sure you've done your due diligence on all of this. And what has that told you?
Well, I just want to – Chris is making a very good argument, and I just want to come at it from that perspective. I want to talk about people's lives because that's where the rubber really hits the road. I worked at a shelter. I was the director of one of our state's largest shelters for women, children, and families for 5 years. One out of five of the women in our shelter were working full-time, 40 hours to 60 hours per week in a low-wage job, not able to stably stay housed and still finding themselves in a shelter. That is not acceptable in St. Louis. We cannot have that happen, where we have people who are doing the very best that they can to take care of themselves and take care of their families, working full-time or more, working three and four jobs, and not able to care for their families. This is not something that is good for these families. It's not good for our community, and it's not good for our nation. We end up paying the dollars that will take care of these families and help them to survive. So I was at that shelter, and by the way, when I first started at the shelter, we were paying the minimum wage or just slightly above. We were around $8 an hour. I had 26 hourly workers, many of whom were not even high school graduates. But we were receiving money from the city, and the city has a living wage ordinance. And I argued with the board. I said, if we're receiving money from the city, why aren't we paying a living wage to our own workers? And so we encouraged moving to a living wage, $13 with benefits bottom, moving to a prorated amount of money for those who had been with us for 15 or 20 years. So that took it up to more than $20 an hour for many of our into the mid-20s. The result was that in 1 year, the performance of our organization based on third-party measurement increased by 400%. People took charge of their job. They became accountable for the measurements that we put in front of them, the result being that we were able to grow our organization and substantially increase our ability to help families in St. Louis.
I had a question that was raised this morning on Facebook. Someone emailed me, Scott, writing and said, please ask the question that no one asks in this debate. Give us examples of how and where employment numbers increased when the minimum wage was raised. Do you know of an example?
Well, I think there are many studies that show that there is very little impact. About half of the studies in my thinking or my work research indicate that there is some loss, but there are many gains as well. The other thing is that half of the research that I've looked at, there is very minimal to no loss in states that have increased minimum wage. So certainly there's mixed results on that one, but basically the way I'm looking at it is looking at the actual – just ask yourself the question, what can people do if they're working 40 hours a week and making $16,000? That's the question we need to be answering.
I'd like to
Howard, go ahead, please.
You know, it's not an issue about whether there are people out there who need assistance or deserve assistance from society. To me, the question of the minimum wage is the minimum wage an effective way to help these people out? And my point is that it's not, because it causes more people to become poor and to stay poor. And many of the people who would be receiving the minimum wage are not poor, and it's just a very poor use of resources to try to help people. If we want to try to help people, there are a lot better ways to do it, and things that there are policies that will encourage people to work and to get jobs, and employers to encourage employment rather than to discourage it, which is what the minimum wage does, and the burden of it falls on the poorest. And I find that part unacceptable, because most of the benefits of the minimum wage go to the non-poor.
I have to take a break now. I want to come back and pick up on a couple of the points that you've raised, Howard Wall. We are talking about the minimum wage, the pluses and minuses of increasing the minimum wage. There is a movement across the country, as many of you know, to do just that in many places, and there's an equally strong movement to keep that from happening in many of those places. My guests in studio, Howard Wall, you just heard from him. He chairs the economics department at Lindenwood University. Also with me is local restaurateur Chris Summers. He recently increased the minimum wage for his employees to $10.10 an hour. And Reverend Martin Raffanon is active on workers' rights issues here in St. Louis. You've heard his name in connection with the attempt by fast food workers in St. Louis to increase their minimum wage to $15 an hour. We'll come back and continue the discussion. We'd love to bring you into it at 382-8255. That's 382-TALK. You can send us an email at talk@stlpublicradio.org. Or you can send us a tweet at SDL on air. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again and welcome back to our conversation on the minimum wage with Reverend Martine Ruffinon, who is active on workers' rights issues here in St. Louis. Howard Wall chairs the economics department at Lindenwood University, and Chris Summers is a restaurateur. He is the owner of Pies and Gringo Restaurants. Howard, let me come back to you. A question has just been raised with something you said a moment ago. What do you mean when you say the raising the minimum wage would basically go to the non-poor people?
Well, about half of the workers who currently work for the minimum wage are from non-poor households, actually not just non-poor, but actually pretty well off. So the numbers, it's tough to keep everything up to date, but a few years ago it was about 45% of people working for minimum wage were in households that were earning more than $63,000 a year. So if you raise the minimum wage, they get more money. That has no effect on poverty, obviously. So that's, again, not – although this is supposed to be helping the poor, it often ends up helping the less poor or the non-poor at the expense of the poorest.
Martine and Chris, is that a point?
Well, I have no clue where that information came from. I've never seen it before personally. My work with fast food workers across the state indicates that the predominant group of folks that we're working with are low-income people under poverty level, really, with regard to the wage that they're making in fast food. So, and a McDonald's worker who's making $8 or between $8 and $9 an hour, you know, they're making a poverty wage. It doesn't really meet even poverty standard.
Howard, where did those numbers come from?
Well, it comes from various studies. I can cite it. David Newmark is a paper I have from it. But the other kind of a technical point is that often people look at individual level wages and see, okay, if a person works for that much, then they're going to be poor. But most people are in households who work for minimum wage. So you have to look at household income to address poverty.
Well, Chris, it seems to me there may be a point here. I mean, we're seeing an awful lot and hearing an awful lot today about many young people with college degrees are working for minimum wage in fast food restaurants and places like yours.
That is the case, and I think it's the case within my own restaurants and I think the larger economy that it was the – I think Howard's numbers are a bit dated. I think more and more so it is single women supporting children and families, and it is the case within our own restaurants. And you know, I'm starting to meet more and more people in the fast food business as well. A gentleman I met over at an event with Dick Durbin, Senator Durbin, across the river, been working at McDonald's for 4 years at minimum wage and no raise. And you know, that the price of a Big Mac has obviously gone up in that period of time dramatically. But I do think, and I've heard, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but Howard's numbers used to be a bit more true. It was the high schoolers might come from middle upper class families. It's less and less the case. It is people who this is their sole source of income, and they are supporting not only themselves but potentially others.
Well, it is true that if you look at now, I mean the economy's been in the toilet for a few years now, so certainly the things will be different. But during regular times when the economy is moving, the numbers I said are kind of the long term trend. But certainly now, there's a lot of underemployment. So in some sense, you can pay minimum wage and get better workers than you could a few years ago.
Can I chime in here for a second? About the economy and the toilet. I mean, I think in a lot of senses, there's a lot of people who still believe and are still affected by an economy that took a tailspin. But for many people, the economy has come back. And due to stimulus dollars, due to tax cuts, due to many things that were generally meant to put more money into business owners and those people who – job creators – and that didn't happen. So there's a lot of people who have been left behind in the recovery of the economy. And I think the minimum wage helps those who have been left behind. And we've seen economic policy that has, you know, meant to, you know, create this trickle down. But I think we really need a bubbling up or a trickle up, you know, policy here, because it's just not working in the opposite way.
I should point out there were two minimum wage increases at the federal level. Since the recession began, there was a minimum wage increase in 2009 and – or 8 and 9, I forget which. But two increases in July of subsequent
years. I believe
years.
Those were put in place, though, well before that.
Right. But they obviously started being paid once they were enacted. And you can see sharp – you could see downturns in teenage unemployment immediately when that happened.
I think another thing to add with regard to the jobs is that certainly since the recession, the jobs that have been replaced have not been – the types of jobs that really can support families. And I think this is the scary thing that we're facing in our communities, that according to the Bureau of Labor Standards, 48% of jobs by the year 2020 will be McDonald's-type low-wage jobs. That is a scary thing, not just for it's a scary thing for me as a grandparent now and as a parent. You know, where are the jobs for my children, for my grandchildren?
I will also point out, I just saw this in the paper over the weekend, Senator Elizabeth Warren is saying that if the minimum wage had kept pace with productivity and inflation since 1960, it would be close to $22.
I don't know those particular numbers, but I've seen some more of Senator's numbers, so I don't really wouldn't put much credence in it, actually.
Oh, you don't
no, not impressed.
Believe in the same. Come back to you, Howard. You had said before the break that there are many other things we can do to make life easier and get more money in the pockets of people who are now at minimum wage jobs. What are some of those things?
Well, one policy that's been fairly successful on sort of the welfare reform front is the earned income tax credit. And that actually is a form of a negative income tax. So if you're, you know, we know what an income tax is. You pay more to the government if you the more you earn. But this is if the less you earn, the more the government might actually be giving you. So it's a negative income tax. And that works as a wage subsidy. So if you do work for $8 an hour or whatever, then you get this automatic subsidy to supplement that. So it's the benefit of it is that it's targeted towards low wage and low income rather than just kind of a ham-fisted.
And the interesting thing is that I get to pay that.
Yeah. So the government
you're already paying it through higher prices
saying.
In your goods. It's not free. They're not printing money at McDonald's and just handing it out.
No, McDonald's
Someone
is taking
is
the money. They made almost $7 billion in profit last year, and they paid their shareholders an addition $7 billion
in payback. And they will continue to do that almost exact same amount if you increase the minimum wage. McDonald's is not going to be paying this. Consumers will be paying.
An extra 25 cents on every McDonald's visit will pay a living wage and benefits to all of its workers. I, for one, be happy to pay a quarter more for my number two.
And so would the people making minimum wage because the percentage of their take-home or discretionary income that they spend on food is very small.
Well, they have that option right now. They can voluntarily give that money. The point is whether the government imposes this on everyone in the economy, and it's going to have negative effects. You can't deny that.
Well, the $8 an hour translates roughly to about $16,000 a year. With regard to this tax situation, how much would that add to that $16,000 a year?
Well, that depends on the level of support that's chosen, but you can
what's the maximum, do you think?
Oh, well, since it's not in place, I couldn't even say. But you can do $5,000, $10,000, something like that. You know, there's all the formulas to figure out.
What is absolutely clear, Don, is that a dollar more increase in the minimum wage puts another $2,800 in the pocket of a person who is a low-wage worker. And that $2,800 is not put into a bank account someplace. It is spent in our communities. Hopefully they're going to be spending it over at your place.
Well, you know what? Our employees actually spend it on child care. They spend it on those things. These are not – I'm not fabricating these. These are car repairs to get to our restaurants because we don't have, you know, transportation dollars for great mass transit. People are spending the economy just to – spending money in the economy just to get to work and to keep their jobs. And unfortunately, we have to terminate people if they don't show up, even if it's because of child care. And it is these – the items that they can afford because of just a small incremental raise are those which keep them employed and keep the economy ticking.
Let's take a couple of calls. We have a number of people interested in getting into this discussion. We'll start with Jeff calling from St. Louis. Jeff, thanks for waiting. Go ahead.
Hi, thank you. Your guest, Howard, I believe is his name.
Yes, sir.
Has, not surprisingly, every time he's mentioned this, points out that there are jobs lost. He doesn't mention that there are jobs gained as well. And Martin, he did point out that the results are mixed. But if I understand this correctly, the meta research, the studies that study the studies, seem to indicate that across the board it's a wash, that overall, nationwide, there are as many jobs gained as there are lost. But the result then is that those people who are working are earning more, and thus they are spending more. So they are contributing to the economy, and so it is a social good, even if it's numerically neutral.
All right, Howard Wall.
So the studies do show that there are people who do gain, and there are people who are go back to work. Maybe they would be out of work, wouldn't be working, but they would go maybe get a be the second earner in their household if the minimum wage goes up. So the net effect on employment in percentage terms is not that large, and the CBO's numbers of 500,000 jobs lost if the minimum wage goes up to 10.10 is actually about in the ballpark. It's actually a tiny percentage. It's about a third of a percent. You know, half a million is a lot. But my point is that it's a distribution from the poorest to the less poor in employment. And that's the problem. It's the distribution of jobs. The small overall decrease in jobs is a point, but it's the bad redistribution of employment, which is why I don't think the minimum wage is a good idea.
Well, while we're talking percentages, I have figures in front of me here that are interesting and certainly relevant to this conversation. Economic statistics show that incomes for the top 1% of U.S. households soared 31% from 2009 through 2012 after adjusting for inflation, yet inched up an average of 0.4% for those making less. Many economists are sounding alarms that the income gap, greater now than at any time since the Depression, is hurting the economy by limiting growth in consumer spending. That would seem to weigh somewhat against your argument.
No, absolutely not. I actually agree with Chris that the policies that have been pursued the last 5 years have been completely wrong-headed and have gotten us into this problem. The reason that people at the top are doing so well is that the Fed gives away free money for them to invest in the stock market. And that obviously is not trickling down. And it's policies that we've been following those few years that has us in this difficult situation.
Thoughts, gentlemen?
Well, no, I do agree because most of the money that unfortunately people said would be earmarked for creating new jobs, buying new plants, buying, you know, creating new jobs in general was just reinvested in the stock market. And, you know, and Howard is right on that point. But I think you talk about redistribution and the poor to the even poorer. I think, honestly, as Martine has pointed out several times, you and I, we all pay for the poverty that results from these wages in government assistance. And that's a redistribution from the wealthiest. And that is something that obviously the Show Me Institute and others would be very upset about.
I'd like to bring into this conversation Justin Johnson, who has worked at McDonald's for 3 years now. He's 20 years old. He makes $7.60 an hour, just a little bit above Missouri's minimum wage. Justin, thank you so much for being with us.
How you doing?
All right. Tell me what life is like on $7.60 an hour. Do you live at home, or are you on your own?
Well, I'm actually on my own, and I'm new to fatherhood. I got a beautiful young daughter I just had on Christmas Eve. And working for minimum wage, trying to take care of family and pay for utilities, it's like basically check from check. It's definitely hard for me, but I guess I got to do it. But that's why I'm a part of the Show Me 15 campaign, because I believe in it.
You're actively involved, as I understand it, with efforts to increase the minimum wage for fast food workers, of which you are one, to $15 an hour. How would that change your life?
That would be a marvelous change. That would help me support not only myself, my family, but the 15 will be marvelous and grateful. But let's think about the union. The basic, you know, benefits that my jobs are automatically supplied. I gotta depend on government assistance, because living check to check, working at McDonald's is like, that's like, whoa.
What is your overall annual net income with the assistance that you get, Justin, and your salary?
And I work 40 plus hours a week. It's like my check be like a week. I mean, every 2 weeks don't be no more than $325, and after they take out, it come down to like 300 pence and change. And then I gotta go put money up for rent, and then I gotta put money up for utilities. Not only yet, Pampers is $25, and that like leaves me with no spending money. That's not even including getting on the public using the bus to get to work. I have no leftover money.
Do you have any other income coming in at all? Is there anyone else in the family bringing in money?
Me and my significant other, and she works at McDonald's as well. So we both are like living check to check, making it work, trying to make it work.
Chris, you look like you wanted to ask
I was going to say that the gentleman apparently does a good enough job at McDonald's that they've kept him for 4 years and they haven't really given him any significant raise. So come on over and see us at any of our restaurants. We'd happily pay you $10.10 or go to restaurantpi.com/apply and come over and make much more of a living wage. We'd love to have you.
Justin, do you have access to a computer?
I have to go to the library.
All righty. Well, they have plenty of them there. Chris, give them that address one more time.
RestaurantPI/apply. Or you can come into any of our restaurants that the locations are listed on the website. But we would love to have you.
Okay, and I gladly appreciate it. I'm a dependable worker. I'm respectful, responsible, on time, better time management. And you don't have to worry about nothing.
Well, apparently you are if you've been there for 4 years. I'm sorry to cut you off.
Justin, get to the library. Thank you so much for being with us. We wish you the best of luck, and we appreciate your spending a little time with us. Go to the nearest library ASAP. Thanks, Justin.
Okay, and I want to thank you, and also I want to thank you, Mr. Martin, for coming out supporting us most definitely.
You're very welcome, Skillet.
This is Martin, this is a typical case, I guess, from what I've been reading and what I've heard you say.
Well, it's exactly – I mean, here you have Justin saying that he works. And remember, he's working about 20 hours a week. The average fast food worker gets about 24 hours a week in St. Louis. So 36,000 fast food workers, he's getting an average 24 hours at minimum wage or just above. So therefore, just even to make up the full-time or larger number of hours, his wife has to work full-time or has to work as many hours as possible in fast food or – another job. So this is how they're cobbling together. And what's happening is that folks in a family are taking multiple jobs. And as a result, they find very little time for their families, for their community, for their church. They're just putting everything into just trying to survive. And this is another aspect. We in St. Louis are a generous community, compassionate community. We feel that everyone should have the opportunity to engage in their community to help build it. And in order for that to happen, they need to get a fair wage.
I have to take a break. But before I do that, Howard, I want to turn to you just to get your reaction to someone like Justin. I mean, here's a typical case. Obviously, this young man has got has difficulties just making ends meet.
Well, there's 2 points to it. One is if we had this conversation 15 years ago in 1999, we would be talking about how difficult it was to hire anyone at McDonald's because employment was extremely high. The economy was very strong, right? So now it is not. So there are many more people who are in trouble. And what we need is a strong economy, and a minimum wage doesn't deliver that. The other is I would ask, if the minimum wage went up to $10, would he still have his job? And would someone like, not him but somebody else, would someone like them be better off if they lost their job? And my take is probably not.
But, you know, a strong economy is based on consumer spending, as I understand it. I'm not an economist, but it's a big part of it. It would seem to me that we have more people able to spend more. That would help improve the economy.
Well, as I said, although it's only whatever 25 cents a hamburger or whatever it was, that person who's spending that is less money to spend also. So it's a wash in terms of spending because you're taking money from consumers and giving it to who are workers and giving it to other workers who then consume, and it just cancels each other out. You don't have some magic potion of creation of spending by reallocating it.
Chris, I know you want to respond to that, but I do have to take a break. We'll do that now and be back in a minute. You just heard from Howard Wall, that is, chairs the economics department at Lindenwood University. With me in studio also is Chris Summers, local restaurateur, and Reverend Martin Raffanon, who is very, very active on workers' rights issues in this community. Back to take your calls, too. We have a number of people who want to get into the conversation. We'll do that when we come back. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again and welcome back as we continue our conversation on the pluses and minuses of increasing the minimum wage. Chris, you wanted to make a point, and let's do that before I go to the phones.
No, I just wanted to say about how restaurant economics work that Howard questioned whether Justin, the gentleman from McDonald's, would still have a job after a stepped-up minimum wage to $10.10. And I know what labor costs are. I know what increases to labor costs are. We have elected not to pass along any additional costs of this labor to our customers. But even if McDonald's did, and Martin made reference to the fact that he would happily pay, an extra quarter to provide a living wage. And many of your constituents and the people you advocate upon for, I know, would do the exact same thing. So the economics, don't worry about the restaurant. Don't worry about, and many independents would like to tell me, Summers, you have six of them or whatever. But, we run a tight ship. But at the same time, there's plenty of room for an improvement, and there's plenty of room for the incremental increase.
Have you scuttled any expansion plans? Have you reduced hours for any of your employees since increasing the wage?
No, in fact, we've increased them.
And yet, Howard, these are two of the arguments that you hear.
Well, I'm sure you can find that there are companies that have higher productivity per worker and can pay higher wages. I don't deny that. Mm-hmm. And that's all we have with one example. But to apply that economy-wide and say every business in the country of 330 million people is going to have anything like that is just incorrect.
I got a letter the other day that was left by some guests, three retired people who have a fixed income, had never been to our restaurants before, heard that we were paying a living wage, and they wrote to us that was the reason they were there. They thought it was the right thing to do, and that's where they chose to spend their money. And their point truly is what Danny Meyer, a St. Louisan, would say about the restaurant industry. You take care of your employees, they take care of their guests, and everything works out. And just because it's across the board doesn't mean that people aren't going to feel – any employee isn't going to feel better about where they're working because they can actually get by.
I have an email here from Vicky saying, have any of these businesses against raising the minimum wage tried asking their customers what they think? If I go to Joe Schmo's sandwich shop and buy a sub for $6.50 and this would sell for $7.20 because the shop owner decides to give employees more money, I'd be happy to pay the extra 70 cents. Is there any information out there that can support what Vicky believes?
Personally, we're having one of our best springs that we've ever had, and it's hard to attribute that to necessarily to the minimum wage. But our customers have come out emphatically in support of what we're doing, and that wasn't the reason to do it, but it makes it feel that much better.
72% of Americans want to see the minimum wage increased, and 48% of those folks are Republicans. So this thing is bipartisan and across the board. Folks want to see the minimum wage raised. I just want to read just a couple of words from Archbishop Robert Carlson, because he speaks directly to this in terms of the St. Louis community. Blessed John Paul II teaches that a just wage is the concrete means of verifying the justice of the whole socioeconomic system. Why? Because we believe the laborer truly is worthy of his or her wage, and because a society that cares for the least of its citizens, including the unemployed, homeless, disabled, and uninsured, is a society that will flourish in the sight of God and in its material and spiritual well-being. It's the morally right thing to do. It's an economically right thing to do. And it's going to be a good thing for the St. Louis community, and we will get it done.
I would like to address the morality of that, because I have exactly the opposite opinion. I think that it's immoral to transfer employment from the lowest skilled in the economy and the poorest to others. And I think that is the big problem with the minimum wage, is that it is so efficient at helping a small number of people or some number of people at the expense of the least well-off. And if I were to follow the bishop's advice, I would oppose the minimum wage, because I think it benefits those who are least well off among us when you couple it with policies, you substitute it with policies that actually make economic and, in my view, moral sense.
No, I think the Archbishop has it correct and says that increasing the minimum wage raises all of our boats. That's the case. And, of course, there would be those who would say that that's not the case, but I would say look at who's supporting those opinions. And I would say it's the wealthiest in our communities. So the time's
come.
I'm not
one of the wealthiest, by the way.
I know you are not, but if you look at the donor list to your organizations, I would say you do represent that view. So I'm just saying that this is something that will raise everybody's boat, including the folks who are, as I said before, McDonald's doesn't need to give up its profits. If they were able to just say, we're willing to do this, we want to do this, we want to increase the wages of our workers, they could continue to make a very successful and be a very successful and profitable business and pay their workers fairly.
Many restaurants are doing that already. There's a surcharge for health care, a surcharge for a living wage. You see it in many larger cities. It hasn't really caught on here. But what you find is those restaurants are packed. Their customers are happy to do it.
Why are we only talking restaurants? I mean, there are other minimum wage jobs out there and in other fields.
I was talking about even in the nonprofit world. I mean, with workers in a shelter, we saw tremendous increases in productivity and in the ability of our organization to do better for the whole community.
Let's go back to the phones and a number of folks ready to go. Charles in St. Louis, we'll take you first. Go ahead, Charles.
Good afternoon, Don. I got 2 points to ask of Howard. One, if raising the minimum wage from $7.25 an hour in Missouri would kill jobs, would $7.26 an hour kill jobs? I mean, or would it be $10.09 that would kill jobs, or somewhere in between? What's the straw that breaks the camel's back for job killing? And second, how is it that the state of Washington, which has one of the highest minimum wages at $9.62 an hour, has one of the lowest unemployment rates? And I'll take your answer off the phone. Thank you. Bye.
Well, the state of Washington is fairly prosperous, and they can actually afford a higher minimum wage because they have a higher productivity. And that actually brings the point that the real goal, the real source of wealth in the economy is a productive workforce. And we should be working on making workers more productive so that they can get paid more freely instead of having a minimum wage which does not increase their productivity but actually decreases the productivity of some who never get the just get that first rung on the ladder.
Are you saying that fast food workers and people who receive a low wage or minimum wage are unproductive workers?
No. I'm saying that the value that they produce is in the market is less than an engineer. And the value of what they produce is somehow reflected in their wage. If there's an opportunity to make profit and
so who determines the value actually? Because it appears to me that fast food workers are actually allowing their business to make a massive profit.
Okay.
So that, it would seem to me, is being highly productive.
Right, and they get paid presumably for it. Right, so they get paid a wage, and if they're being paid underpaid relative to their productivity, then Chris will step in and scoop them up like he just did with our caller. But if there is some monetary value that the worker has that is not being exploited by an employer, then employers should take advantage of that and increase their own profits by hiring these workers who aren't being paid enough.
We have an email here from Jim who says, I've been a manager for a big box retailer for many years and have one observation and two questions. Our managed labor hours are based on dollars per hour, not bodies needed to do the job. If I were to raise my average wage from $8.50 an hour to $12 an hour, I would either have to cut hours on the floor, reduce my high wage earners' pay, unless the company agreed to increase our average and effective wage budget. So there is one example of someone who feels it would be costly.
I don't know exactly how they do it, but Costco has managed to do it as a big box retailer to pay a wage significantly larger than minimum wage, even a living wage, and significantly larger than their largest competitor, that being Sam's. So it, we can do it, they can do it, others can do it, and it's just the reality of the situation. And I do have experience speaking from an operator who has paid closer to minimum wage, who is now paying greater than minimum wage, and we're doing fine.
Well, then I suggest a better policy is to go around and try to convince employers that they can do a better job than they're currently doing.
Because that's a good point.
And that's fine. But some businesses probably do know what they're doing. And if they increase their wages, would end up hiring fewer workers. That's not to say there aren't some who could be better off. And as you with the examples you gave, that's absolutely true. And great for them. But that does not mean that you should impose a minimum wage so that what works for Costco and for Pi will work across the entire economy.
Let's bring in Mary calling from Kirkwood. Mary, thanks for waiting. Go ahead.
Hi, I just want to commend Chris, and I want to say that he's definitely figured out that your employees are your best brand ambassadors, which I certainly have found in my job, whether you're working at McDonald's or for a very large corporation. But I think overall, when we talk about this, it sounds a lot of people who are against it talk about how it's an inevitable that business is going to fire a bunch of people. But I think that, as you guys have discussed, that they really have a choice. And I think that Americans are proving that we have a choice, too, because we've been a very fast food nation that wants things quick and doesn't think about the people or the ingredients or whatever you have, whatever you'd call it, behind everything, and that now we're starting to make that transition back to maybe the good old nostalgic days where we're starting to realize that there are lives behind everything that we do, even if you're just going to McDonald's.
Thank you so much for the call. Any sense, Chris, that you might have that now that you've increased the minimum wage, that people who were above the minimum wage before will now be asking for more, or may have asked for more?
Well, we preempted that because we did give basically across the board raises, because we did think that if somebody was coming in off the street making $10.10 and somebody, you know, their manager or somebody who had been there for a couple of years was making less than that, we wanted to raise all, you know, all ships. And but again, that was all worked into our budgets and our labor budgets, and everything is working out. As Howard mentioned, you know, if we need to find more value out of some of our lowest wage workers, we promote them. You know, and if those who can't cut it at the lowest wage, we'll work them out. But we promote from within, and that's, you know, the biggest. We love seeing people come up from the lowest level, from these lowest skilled, and we want to give them skills. And frankly, we have people now who have left us and gone and opened their own restaurants. We have people who now manage the finest restaurants in St. Louis who came through our training program.
I'm going to take one more call, as time will allow just one. Alexis in St. Louis, please make your question or comment brief.
Okay. I just had one, actually 2 points. The first one is, how do we prevent businesses from acting like they did when they were forced to do the health care reform and they cut hours so they wouldn't have to pay full-time workers? And two, should we do more in relation to the minimum wage, like force people who have been way past retirement as far as CEOs and higher up in management?
All right. Who would like to take that, Chris?
Well, just related to health care, you know, next year when the employer mandate kicks in, we as a company would be fined if the percentage of our employees' take-home pay is less than a fixed percentage, we would be fined for that. So by paying our employees a higher wage, we as a business eliminate fines as well. And this, my our HR director just brought this to my attention a couple of weeks ago. We didn't factor that into our desire to do this. But in fact, paying a higher wage is better for the business, meaning lower fines.
Right. We only have a few seconds left. I'm going to give Howard a chance for a final thought, if you can do it in 15 or 20 seconds.
I can do that. And the answer is that you can't force businesses to not lay off workers. They will do it because their job is to maximize profits. For whether we like that or not, that's what they'll do.
Final thought from you, Martine?
Just thinking about the lives and the stories of people who are in need in our community. And the way that we can help them is by increasing the minimum wage and moving toward a living wage.
All right. Well, gentlemen, I want to thank you so much for being with us. I'm not sure that all minds here at the table were changed as on the basis of this discussion, but it's been a good one and an intelligent one, I think. And many people, I'm sure, will be talking about this and continuing the dialogue that has long since begun. Thank you, Martine Raffanon, for being with us. Chris Summers, great to see you again. Again, congratulations to you and yours. And we'll be seeing you at one of the local pies or the Gringos. Thank you so much. And Howard Wall, thank you also for being with us. Great to have you. Tomorrow on St. Louis on the Air, we'll take a look at the final report in the For the Sake of All study examining the health and well-being of African Americans in St. Louis and the recommendations for future action. Archive versions of past St. Louis on the Air programs are available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org. St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Don Marsh.